Hey everyone, welcome to the Food Not Bomb Sydney podcast. I'm your host, Daniel, and here today with a longtime volunteer, one of the first people I interacted with in the group chat, Ezra. So Ezra, thanks for making the time for this casual chat
No
conversation.
worries, no worries. Thanks for coming all the way here to meet me.
Absolutely, pleasure. We won't say where we are in case that's not a good thing,
Yeah.
but apart from the location, how's your day today?
My day's been like pretty all right. I am looking to I've been planning how to make a bunch of stuff with my food processor. Got a new food processor, so I'm planning to bust out some pesto, some hummus,
Ooh.
some peanut butter, and potentially Nutella, like a
Nice.
Nutella spin-off thing. I
Wow.
love DIY stuff, so we could make this whole podcast just about DIY food making.
Future episode plan.
Oh, and I'm making oat milk, loads of oat milk, because that's where most of my waste at home is. It's just like oat, like cartons of whatever stuff.
Yes.
So yeah, that's,
Mad.
but I'm planning for that. I haven't actually done much else today besides just planning for that in my year.
Once you make all the mistakes and then learn from those mistakes, we can have a podcast. That'd be
Yeah,
cool.
100%.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
definitely. I'll post my results and like post pictures of it or whatever.
Yeah, sick. The intro for those who don't know you. How did you kind of, what's your story with Food Not Bombs? How'd you get started? How'd you first hear about it?
So I was really into anarchist politics, but I didn't know many like anarchist groups. I didn't know many anarchists at all. I actually only knew one person. And this was like late 2020, I think, or just early 2021. Someone, one of my, the one like anarchist friend I had in real life, because there's an infinite amount of online anarchists. Was like, hey, you should come to this Food Not Bombs thing. And I'd never heard of it before. And I just like quickly, I'm like, okay, it looks like you just cook up at someone's house. And that seems neat. So I just came to it and I was like, that's nice. That seems like a good way to meet other people. So I went to some more of it and I just got like mad hooked on it. So
So it's
yeah.
2021, like,
Yes, I believe
yeah.
the first time my name appears on the roster, the old roster, was February 2021 from memory. But I think I went to one prior to that, which was one I went with my friend. Yeah, and they just do it as like a fun little one thing. Like, some people come and go and they do it for a little bit, and that's so fine. And it's just funny. Yeah, for me, I was just hooked on it and I've been doing it since then.
Wow,
Yeah.
sick. One of the OGs, I guess, from that era,
Yes, yeah.
longest
This
standing.
for yeah, there's only two of us left. There's me and one other person who's, I don't know if they want to be named.
Sure,
So,
sure,
but
sure.
yeah, the one other person still in Food Not Bombs, who is also from that time, that era.
Yeah, sick. Like
Yeah.
post-COVID era as well.
Yes, but yeah, they were there pre-lockdown and went through lockdown, helped actually a lot with lockdown logistics. Yeah.
Sick. And one of the things that we had a chat about is like how to keep people coming back, or what can like facilitate that. So what are the, what would you say, like reflecting on the 3 or so years you've been involved, what keeps you coming back?
Yeah, I've got to say it's consistent, which is one of those things you don't find very often, either even with friends sometimes, but just in general with like protests or yeah, those places, those spaces that you normally interact with people who are maybe more politically radical. Yeah, you don't really see them on a regular basis. You don't get to discuss these ideas on a regular basis. And for me, Food Not Bombs being a regular thing, was what kind of got me like, oh, I could like, I missed that week, but I can just come next week. Whereas like, there are definitely, friends of mine who've been like, oh, you missed that event. That was like the best thing ever. It was like so hectic, something like that. You can just come to a new Food Not Bombs server. There's always one every week. So that was good. And after, yeah. So like, after I kind of like had been going in a lot of times, what actually got me from, because I was just doing transport for ages, and I would drive for so long just to come down to quickly do like transport back and forth. Like, I think I mostly just transported food from cook to serve, and then I just went straight home. This was back when I was doing a lot of sport, so I just had more sport to do, and it was, yeah. That was the main role I did, and it was fine for a while, but once you kind of done that consistently, what really actually got me hooked on it, because this was just kind of like getting to chat to people, was doing transport. What got me hooked on it was realizing the amount of, like, the flexibility available in Food No Bombs, that it wasn't like, this is what we do and this is the only thing we do. It was, this is what we do. Do you have any other ideas? Because if you do, just fucking ask and go for it. Like, and that, I think, was just awesome. Having this feeling of, maybe it's not the right word to use, but like power, having the feeling of like, oh, I can go ahead with this. Like, everyone said it was fine. I know you yourself, when you asked us, like, are you guys interested in a podcast? And I just remember thinking, like, yeah, if you're down to do it, go for it. Like, as long as no one dissents, which, who's going to dissent to, like, let's run a podcast? Like, maybe some people might, I don't know. But, you know, that was what kept me coming back, was being like, this is a space where I can just continue doing whatever, not whatever I want, but I can work on something that's larger than myself, which feels nice.
Yeah. And there's that horizontal power. So anyone, like, everyone's opinion is equally respected, and it's about, like, consensus decision-making. So you don't have to, like, wait until you are, you know, more experienced, or you have some extra knowledge or skill sets or clout or fucking a car or something, or I don't know, some other power. You can create an idea from scratch, and then it can be implemented across the group. So there's, yeah, a lot more potential and flexibility and adaptability.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, adaptability for sure. Because I made use of my own skills when I didn't have, I think it was during lockdown. I think it was just definitely, I'd taken a step back from doing transport because it was too much fuel. Didn't really make sense given where I was. And it was like actually making me a bit cranky being stuck in traffic. Because obviously, as you can imagine, if you're heading back from serve at 5 p.m., you are stuck in peak traffic and it sucks. But yeah, I found I could adapt my skills in tech, and I helped make the website for Food Not Bombs, which, yeah, very happy with.
Cool. And you mentioned, like, earlier you were already kind of into anarchy or anarchism. I'm curious what kind of drew you to that? Like, you were already kind of aware, it seemed. What inspired you, or where did you learn, or how did you get into that before you even started Food Not Bombs? Because I always find that quite interesting.
I actually, that was one of my first questions to, I think, wasn't our first picnic, but I think maybe like our second big picnic I at least attended for Food Not Bombs. So we used to do these things a lot, for those that are listening that might not have seen these events come up as much. We used to do these potlucks every so often where, like, it was kind of volunteer. It wasn't necessarily volunteers only. We would advertise it out to the public. So it was just like anyone can come. It wasn't like serve. It was like, obviously, people just cook at home and bring their own stuff. And I actually remember asking people at the potluck, like, so how did you guys become radical? Because, and to me, it seemed like an obvious question, because I didn't have a lot of radical friends prior to Food Not Bombs. And so I was like, how did everyone else end up here? And it was really interesting because, yeah, you hear lots of different perspectives, lots of different journeys. Mine kind of is a bit odd, perhaps. Maybe it sounds a bit at odds with Food Not Bombs. But it began with a reading of The Ego and Its Own by Max Stirner, which, for those that haven't read it, kind of centers everything around yourself. Kind of, perhaps maybe the opposite of what some people might get from I haven't done much readings of like Buddhist stuff, but like this kind of rejection of the ego. This is more of like, no, actually, I sometimes describe it as radical self-care. You go, well, actually, it's about what makes me happy, or what makes it's about doing what I want. Like, it sounds pretty, what's the word? Like
selfish or egotistical. Like, yes. That's the kind of associations we have.
Yeah.
And it's maybe more like a different type of, like, egocentric kind of anarchism. There's like social anarchism is another one. So yeah, that was the first kind of entry for you into
this and
kind
it
of thought?
Absolutely. I was hooked on it. I, you know, read that book while I was on holidays, and I remember walking out at one point and just reading aloud passages of the book like to my parents, who were like, the fuck is going on? But it was fantastic because it recognizes that putting anything above yourself, above your own needs, like Stirner points out, is like pretty bad idea. Don't do that. You should always ask yourself, like, is this what I want to do? And it becomes an incredibly complex question. And I could do a whole podcast about it because it's an easy question. It's an easy way to like condense your own personal philosophy. And then at the same time, it becomes incredibly layered once you ask yourself, who I like, what do I want? Who is I? And all this stuff. It gets wacky, but
So like developing your own theory, self theory from there, of like what's important to you, what do you stand for?
Yes.
And like having to think for yourself, which is like something that we don't often have that prompts to do, I guess, in schooling, society. Cool.
100%. Yeah. And yeah, I would just say I read that book and I kind of, that got me into anarchism, and Food Not Bombs makes me happy. That's why I do it. Yeah. So yeah.
Nice. And one of the things that we kind of see in our volunteering is communities who are homeless and who have kind of lower socioeconomic status. And one of the questions that I think is helpful for us to reflect on are like what might be some of the causes of this. And this is like, I feel, one of the ways that we can make a bigger difference if we look at the root causes of the problems that we're seeing, or at least acknowledge the underlying reasons why people need free food in the first place. So yeah, what are your thoughts? Obviously, not saying that we're experts on this topic, but what comes to mind?
Well, I could just say capitalism and then full stop and then call it a day.
Next question.
Yeah. But yeah, it gets a lot. It's obviously a lot deeper than that. Yeah, I would say, at least here in Sydney, and again, this is just from my observation and from my understanding of like the demographics around Sydney, I think a lot of this comes more from centralized social structures and lack of adequate literacy and care. So if you, I know that was kind of like a lot, but the centralized social structure is when you've got a lot of people who have, like, let's say family, for example, like everyone finds themselves maybe a bit directly connected to their family, such that if they're overly dependent on them and you do something, or maybe something unfortunate happens to your family, it could be a range of different things. It's kind of the whole, don't put all your eggs in one basket. When a disaster happens, or when a social situation, maybe something taboo occurs or whatever, you know, people need someone else to turn to. And when you don't have anyone else to turn to, I think mental health just goes absolute to shit. I say all this because there's the material, you can look at the material conditions and the lack of like lack of food or lack of availability to fresh water. But like, at least here in Sydney, and at least in the more affluent or slightly areas that seemingly have people like that are housed and stuff, how are some people ending up without houses? And I think the start of that journey, and again, I'm very curious to hear from the direct lived experience from people, that like, you know, is that starting with some social issues, some social ill that occurs to them, and without any sort of adequate backup, without adequate friends, perhaps because they've been working a lot, that this is the kinds of things that causes them to go down that, like, this awful journey of losing all your material possessions and being unable to take care of yourself. And that's the other thing, right? So if it's a centralized social structure and we also rely on each other for care, like literal care, even in from physical point of view, if you lose family, and sometimes family are the best and easiest people who can care for your for people with physical or mental like disabilities, it becomes like incredibly sad because you have to then outsource that to people who don't directly know you. And sometimes that's not adequate enough at all. So yeah, I feel like, so yeah, to summarize, decentralized social structures and lack of adequate care, and then also just lack of literacy. I think I've had someone recently bring up to me that a lot of people also haven't been taught how to listen to themselves and this sort of like health literacy ability to go like, should my heart be hurting, or should it be like really hard to get up in the mornings, and like should I be incredibly overtired, is that normal? Like, yeah, lack of communication with one another and lack of understanding like what is and isn't perhaps a red flag in terms of your own health, mental and physical. I think those kinds of things here in Sydney, at least, is my guess.
Yeah. They kind of interact with each other as well. Like literacy levels can allow you to communicate with, I'm talking like within my field of healthcare professionals, and it has their own kind of jargon. So if you're not kind of aware of that, or you don't have the tools to understand, and you don't have family, like I see a lot of people, for instance, English is a second language. So then if they don't have family around them to help translate the healthcare information, then they're kind of stuck. I definitely can agree with if you don't have the safety nets is another way of describing it, of like protective factors that will kind of keep you living and thriving in our systems and in society.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's helpful as a reflection for all of us to think about, like, how can we not like work ourselves out of a job is a common kind of term, but how can we kind of address the root causes with what we're doing already? And reflecting now on 3 years with Food Not Bombs, what have been some of the challenges that you've seen, experienced as your time, apart from the shitty Sydney traffic?
We're going to need a different, not a Food Not Bombs group. I can go, if there's anyone listening who wants to look up Reclaim the Streets, please look into that. That's a really cool anti-car infrastructure. Anyways, but that's another story for another day. Most recently, the challenge has, I think, been conflict resolution, and not just in what, if volunteers are listening, you guys have probably heard of the more recent stuff where we've had people pushing and shoving. That's one aspect, but I think conflict resolution also within the group as well. We've had, with like personal stuff, like we've had volunteers who have had personal serious conflicts that might warrant us being like, well, do we want this person around, like this other person who has caused such conflicts, and how do we go about handling this, and how do you handle it when things like are more gray? Because that kind of stuff gets me thinking, like it gets really tricky, for example, when there's a non-volunteer someone who's taking food who may have a personal issue with one of our volunteers, or vice versa, a volunteer having an issue with a food taker, like personal history perhaps. These things get brought up like here and there, and sometimes they're more serious than others. Like some, I say more serious, sometimes they're more like brought up as in like, this is an ongoing, like I have feel uncomfortable in this space and whatnot. And yeah, I don't know. It's a really big challenge for me. I trying to think about how to handle all the different permutations, different ways that people can be in different positions. Like, well, we still want someone, can they volunteer somehow without sharing space with that person? Or is that still unfair on the person who feels they've been wronged? Everyone, I think, deserves a second chance, and ostracization works in certain communities, but maybe global ostracization is not fantastic. I don't know.
That's tough.
That's a tough one. That's a big one.
Yeah, the relational dynamics and figuring out people's histories and like what people might prefer and feel safe, comfortable with. And I think there's like options for people, as you said, like if people want to have their own space, if they're around someone that they've had a recent kind of conflict with and that's best, then absolutely, that can be like planned and prepared and communicated about. This kind of reminds me of a lot of abolition, prison abolition, police abolition, where there's no kind of, you know, authority figure telling people what they should or shouldn't do. And we don't want to, you know, incarcerate people, as you said, like isolation often doesn't even address the problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a tough one. Like learning on the spot and having these tough, very tough, like sensitive conversations with people.
Yeah. And also, how do you bring that up when everything's consensus based, but also you want to respect people's privacy? And so, like, in one scenario, I was like, well, this person wants to remain anonymous and bringing this up in a meeting, and that the person who is on the other end of things, the person who has caused a problem to the person who's come to us, if they attend the meeting, are they voting on getting themselves kicked out? Like, maybe that's a good thing, or maybe it's not. It kind of feels a bit like it gets a little tricky when you also have to consider consensus based decision making, but also people's privacy.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff I feel like just comes with experience. It's definitely not a Food Not Bombs only problem. Yeah, I'd say the other biggest challenge, which is more lighthearted, but just like, you can't teach people to be autonomous, or like I used to be told by my like sports coach, like, he's like, I can't make you do this thing. Like, there is nothing I can say that is going to just make you do it. You have to do it. And that can be sometimes very frustrating when we can provide as many opportunities and create the kinds of environments that might encourage people to realize, like, oh, I've just got to like say I want to do a podcast, or I want to make a website, or I want to, like, let's do another Food Not Bomb serve. I'm happy to run one every Tuesday or something like that. Like, take on big stuff and small stuff. These kinds of things, like, you can't teach in the sense of, like, I can't just make you realize that thing. And that's a big challenge. That is something that I don't know. That is, it's also like, I may perhaps like an impossible challenge. Like,
oh yeah.
You can only facilitate, and you can never force someone to be autonomous. It makes no sense.
No, that's kind of contrary to the premise of, like, you know, providing that autonomy when they choose whether or not they want to do it in the first place. But yeah, that encouragement of maybe taking initiative when people have an idea, that's a tough one. Like, it's hard to tell as well. We can't read someone's mind if their, like, intention is more of an idea and a thought and like an inspiration, and they need more support, or if it's just like, no, I want to do it, and I'm in the action stage rather than like preparing or just thinking about it phase.
Yes.
And that can be difficult for them to communicate and even like know, and then for the receivers to be like, okay, like, do you need help now, or you're just saying it to see what we think about this idea? So yeah, that the preparation idea versus like the action, and like, hey, I need support, or tell me, like, give me some resources on what to do. That's tough.
Yep. 100%.
Consensus as well.
Yeah.
It takes time.
Yep. Yeah. Doing consensus. Actually, one thing I could recommend, if anyone's listening, any of the volunteers, one of the things I kind of did, it was a bit cheeky with the website, but I kind of made the website before I floated the idea, because I just couldn't wait for the next meeting. I was like, oh my God, we need a website. We should definitely have a website. And I just, like, you know what? I'm just going to make one. I'll make one. And then when I get to the meeting, and obviously this runs the risk of someone going like, no, we don't want a website.
Sure.
And then they
delete all your work.
And then you got to, you got to repurpose it. So that's
worst case.
Yeah, that's worst case. But then, like, I just didn't mean like, hey guys, wouldn't it be great if we had a website? And like you said, there's the brainstorming aspect, and you get people going like, yeah, that'd be great. But it's not like, you don't say, oh, Food Not Bombs should have a website. If you're part of Food Not Bombs, if you say Food Not Bombs should have a website, that means someone needs to build a web. It's not just this like entity. And if it's you who wants the idea created, you need to do it. There's no like, so yeah, saying it to the group and then hearing like, would love a website. And then being able to go like, well, yes, that's perfect. It feels amazing because you've already started on it, and everyone gets really excited because they go, right, that's already in the works. That's fantastic. So, yeah.
So that's an idea. I think we can like just do it or get started on it. And then the worst case, I can't think of many that you have to like delete the whole thing.
No.
If it's an idea, unless it's something like obviously within sensibilities, like in all our imagination. But I don't see that happening. So yeah, maybe people can feel inspired and we have, you know, given some thought permission to take some initiative and then ask for some feedback afterwards. Because if we have to wait for the monthly meeting, then that's quite long.
Yeah, 100%.
Maybe turning now to the audience that are new or thinking about joining Food Not Bombs. Mm-hmm. Are there any like myths, misconceptions about what we do from like the outer crowd or people that haven't really volunteered? Without giving, you know, platforming reactionaries and far-right kind of activists like that.
Yeah. I think misconceptions from regular folks, or just people who tends to go in either direction in for a number of these things. Some people think we pay for our food, like most of the food we bring. It's really weird. I still remember this comment where someone walked up and was like, "What are you guys, a bunch of rich kids who feel bad?" So, like, that's like they've obviously been really jaded. It's fair. I get where they're coming from. Ooh. But it's kind of like, you know, no, we didn't pay for this. We got it out of a filthy dumpster. We got it from like Mission Australia, who donated a bunch to us. Like, you know, however we got our food. A lot of people like want to give us money because they want to reimburse us for this produce that we didn't pay for. But on the flip side, there's the people who are also like, "Oh, you guys don't pay for anything." Like, there's you don't hear this one as much, but it is like sometimes a bit surprising when people are like, "Oh, what do you mean? Like, what would my money be going towards?" I'm like, "Bro, there's so much shit. We got containers, we got disposable cutlery, fuel, people driving around. Anytime stuff goes missing, or we want a storage box in order for people to like keep stuff. Definitely money helps." Yes, unfortunately. Yes. So that's another misconception. I think it's not zero costs, but the costs are not going to the majority of food. There are some costs going to like onions and garlic and stuff like that, but that's probably one, maybe a bit more innocent misconception. Mm-hmm. Some people also come in with the misconception that we're all anarchists and vegan, and if you're not anarchist and vegan, you can't fucking join. Like, I've literally remember, again, I don't know if this person wants to be named, obviously, but they were like, "Oh, you know, I wasn't too sure. Like, I didn't realize you guys were like anarchists, and I don't really know if I fit in." And I was like, "No, it's not anarchist only or vegan only club. It's we are structured horizontally and using consensus based decision making, which gels really well and is informed by anarchist theories, but that doesn't mean that you are required to be an anarchist. Just like how, like, just because you go to work doesn't mean you're necessarily a capitalist or you believe in capitalism. You just are like, well, I like or don't like this thing, and with Food Not Bombs, if it gels with you, it does. Same with the veganism thing. It's been perhaps maybe one of the challenges sometimes being figuring out the boundary between like we serve vegan food as an organization and broadly speaking preach anti-speciesist like theories, but I don't like the word preach, but you know how it is.
Promote
yeah,
but embody, yeah. Try and practice.
Just you being vegan and stuff, and you get people who like, "Oh, vegans are so preachy and stuff." I was like, yes and no. But yeah, it's like we are anti-speciesist in our theory. The understanding that we are non-violent extends to all animals. These kinds of things is the reason why we serve vegan food in practice as a group. But understanding that boundary and border between like, right, well, that's what we do as a group, but that doesn't mean you have to be vegan in the group. And we've had issues before with like, well, if someone wants to bring something not vegan to a members only picnic, how does that work? That was one of the controversies that came up and was one that I really had to like, you know, grapple with myself, because like, yeah, we understand that it's not individual choices that are going to like change the world. You're not going to get like if everyone just buys the soy milks, and then like in theory that's nice and all, but that's not how things work. It comes from like us collectively organizing. So yeah, I think that's been like one of those other misconceptions, which again, like I've had to learn about as well, and been like, well, okay, you don't. I knew not everyone had to be vegan, but like also understanding, like, okay, so what spaces are we publicly like vegan, and what spaces are we also like, hey, like, look, you know, everyone has to survive and get by, and does so in different ways, and there's different cultures involved. It's extremely layered.
Yeah, and there's that inclusiveness. It's not like we need to meet a criteria before we volunteer, participate. It's like you said, it's more that the structure is anarchist based on principles, but the individuals are so different overall, and we're kind of welcome to all who want to participate and who are open to learn and yeah, actively participate in what the structures are.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like, yeah, it's hard to learn when you're excluded from the group that is like, yeah, so it's a safe space for people to learn about this stuff 100%. And yeah, I think that might be a misconception I sometimes hear.
We're not like PETA activists, stripping in the city and,
Yes.
handing out, I don't know, blood or something. I don't know what the most extreme kind of forms that are,
And
sensationalized.
yes, and the forms where like perhaps in those circles, if you turned up and you weren't vegan, they would be kind of like, or at least weren't vegetarian. It there's different like with Food Not Bombs, it has this. I guess it's a bit different in the way that it presents itself and believes in this like anti-speciesism, but is not putting that responsibility entirely on individuals. Particularly understanding that like there are people who have like eating disorders, sometimes based around things they've grown up with, or their cultures that prioritize or don't prioritize certain diets and whatnot. So it's really messy and really layered. And I think that's been a misconception that, again, I had to learn to see past. Yeah, I think I'd say that's, and I reckon one more misconception I've noticed is just this like idea that we're a charity, that we are just like a bunch of people with heaps of free time, like I said, a bunch of rich people with too much money or something. Feel bad.
Wish.
Yeah, straight up. Although if you are a rich person and you're listening to this and you do feel bad, do hit us up. But yeah, no, look, it's like a lot of us aren't full-time volunteers. I am one of the fortunate people who I am on Centrelink, and I'm able to use a lot of this time that I have to pour loads of effort into both Food Not Bombs and my own like personal projects. So that helps me a lot, but I know that broadly speaking, most people in Food Not Bombs that I've met are very much your regular full-time working or full-time studying, either like high school or university. People are fucking busy, and this isn't like some, yeah, just a bunch of people with too much free time.
No.
The majority of people who come, and the majority of people who help out, are helping out in the spare time that they can find and that they're willing to give, and it's beautiful. I think that kind of, because going into that and this idea that like with this charity of just like free loving too much spare time and just want to just like give all this back to the community is like, we're not a charity, and we are actively trying to, and as part of our ongoing critique lately, trying to collectively organize like the working class people, collectively organize so that everyone is able to realize that they can find or and take care of one another without the need of a government. And doing so gives them spare time. In other words, like if you go out of your way to figure out how to acquire free food and share it with others, then everyone else gets more free time to think about and discuss things that are causing them pain or hurt and whatnot, which ultimately can be led, like most of the time, be drawn back to the economic system that we live under. So, that's kind of like the broader goal of it, and it goes beyond charities, who tend to focus on tackling the symptoms and not the cause of the symptoms. And it is something that I think we are having to constantly remind ourselves of, like, how can we make sure that we are, you know, the whole teach a person to fish rather than give them fish. That's kind of what we're about, and teaching people where do the fish come from?
Yes.
How can I grow my own food? Where does this food come from? Why is it being wasted? There's like a lot of questions embedded in what we do, and they're meant to be like, maybe provocative is not the right word. Like, what's the word?
There's a, like, I guess we want to involve people in the process, not just kind of do all the work for them, and we're not doing things to people, so we're empowering them.
There's, yeah,
that agency aspect. I'm sure we can like educate and agitate as well to kind of rev up the,
yeah, I guess maybe agitate is maybe a better word, that like some of the questions embedded in Food Not Bombs, like, why is all this food wasted? Or like, oh wait, we could have free food. Like, this is like you know, a snippet of what things might be like. They're meant to provoke is the word. Yeah. Provoke and agitate people, be like, yeah, why couldn't we have this on a regular basis?
Yeah, that's it. And for people who are interested in volunteering, any messages that you'd like to send that who are listening now? And
oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. If you are listening to this and you feel like, yeah, you're working full time, you're unsure like what you could possibly help with because you're working and way too tired at the end of your work day on a Thursday, and Sundays is the way, like, because they're the 2 days we serve food at the moment. Let's say Sundays, that's family time, or that's time we catch up with your friends and stuff. Like, so fair that you don't know where exactly to, like, how can I help out at Food Not Bombs? This is, you know, they're only free in these days. The message I want to send to everyone who's thinking of joining but is holding back because they're like unsure if they can find the time, it's just that there is so much you can do. And if you just want to join and be in the group chat and just watch how things work for perhaps a week or two and be like, right, okay, how about we do, I don't know, XYZ. How about we serve food around, can I serve food around my neighborhood and borrow you guys' banner? Like, let's see, yeah, you've always got a free day on the Friday or whatever it might be. Ask us. Like, the majority of people, like, why largely speaking, who's going to dissent? As long as, like, yeah, if the banner continues returning back so that it's available for the Sunday, sure, whatever it might be, just realize that it's like as open and as flexible as you basically want it to be. As long as you get consensus from everyone, you can do any, like, quote unquote, anything. Yeah, I'd say that's probably my biggest message. Just get in there, get involved, get your hands dirty. And it will probably involve a bit of lurking, as they say, just being in the group chat and just watching how things unfold. How do we communicate and stuff like that?
Yeah. And maybe, you know, 1 month we might have a different day, or we can propose a serve at a protest, or you're at a protest. I think, yep, there's so many different ways that you can contribute if, like, Thursdays and Sundays are off the cards. Yeah. And then for people who are currently volunteering, what messages would you like to send to the fam?
Well, obviously that one, that in itself, because I know we've got over 200 members. I think we're touching almost on 300 soon members in our group chat. So obviously also get your hands dirty if you're listening and you're kind of like, ooh, I kind of not been doing these kinds of things and I want to get involved in other ways. But I would say that also understand that, like, every little bit helps. I know I've been saying a lot of big things like, oh, you can start a new serve, or you can do this or that. Like, tiny little things helps. That's probably, if you're already involved and maybe you're feeling overworked. Maybe you've been, because that's a big thing that happens to a lot of us, right? We suddenly get too stuck into it. You want to dial back a little bit. So understand that, like, if you have the amount of, like, effort or time you've been spending on Food Not Bombs, that amount that you're still contributing is still helping. Like, even if it's just a fraction. Like, I think about the fact that we recently served in Wollongong. Would not have been possible if there weren't people who were willing to keep the chat going, for the our regular serves. I think most of us probably have prioritized the regular serve. Some of us might not have, but it was awesome to see that, like, hell yeah, we can do both. The old Food Not Bombs chapters were like, oh, should we serve at protests or should we serve on the street? Well, we fucking did both. And that's thanks to the people who are still doing our usual serve. And I think it would have been way messier, probably some more drama in the group chat about which one we should go to. Like, we would have to pick. Yeah, it just means we just have more options every time people contribute that little bit. I wasn't able to work on that website if it wasn't for people who continued to step up on transport when I stepped back. And I recently did this really, really long write-up. I believe you've read it. That long, yeah, the one I put up. It was like really like a deeper analysis on like my recent experiences with Food Not Bombs. That wasn't so much going too far back, but just there's been a lot of changes happening lately. And I would definitely not have done that write-up if they weren't people who did all the like usual checking in with people on the chat, even just a message in the chat like, hey, is anyone on transport tomorrow? Like, if you can see something's missing in the roster, just ask. Just, you don't even have to be the one who's doing the transport. You can just be like, hey, can I just confirm, are we all good for tomorrow's kitchen? Because like, we said it was going to be this person, but they said they were like a big maybe. Like, you, these kinds of things people started doing a lot of and that allowed me to step back and do like that long write-up. And yeah, so just huge shout out to people who do little bits of work. And if you're not doing little bits of work, maybe you're doing too much, or maybe you're not doing heaps and you want to step it up or down, whatever it is, just know that every amount counts, and it helps other people also take steps back and helps other people do those extra projects that you might, maybe you didn't have the energy to do a long write-up, but I did. I just need to find the time.
Yeah, that's right. That community effort, and we all kind of work together. And if you have the capacity, you can do a little bit more. And there is the option of like a importance of organizing and checking in and reminding people, even if you're not kind of serving, for instance. I mean, also like the normalizing the guilt if you aren't able to do as much, and it's okay to step back for your own boundaries and self-care, because we don't want people burning out as much as we want to change the world. And that goes into the last question, like your dream for Food Not Bombs in say 3-5 years time. You can use whatever flexible time frame.
Well, yeah, I 3 to 5 years. I know that we did a survey. I think this was before you joined. We did a survey. Yeah. Yep. And there was a question about, you know, what would the future Food Not Bombs, how would you like it to look? And honestly, I'm thinking of collating some of those responses and chucking them up in our next zine or something. But when I initially answered it, I was kind of like thinking a lot about scaling up. Like, well, we'll like, ideally we could have food every single day, which I still hope for, but now I don't hope for Food Not Bomb Sydney as it currently is serving every single day. No fucking way. I would like to see different groups splinter out. Like, what if we had like some groups like, well, we're Food Not Bombs Petersham, we're Food Not Bombs Marrickville, whatever. And maybe they all borrow the same banner or the same tables. I don't know, but that it is just not feasible for us all to do consensus-based decision-making for every single serve that would happen every single day. And also the protests that would have to be like, that we'd probably want to serve at as well. It's not realistic. So I actually am pretty happy with Food Not Bomb Sydney as it currently is, just serving twice a week or potentially changing to like serving at protests, which we've been discussing. So I guess in other words, what I actually dream of now is more like spin-off groups, more projects. Just seeing Food Not Bombs grow into this like space where, yeah, people, I mean, I guess that's the thing. I can't prescribe exactly what it's going to look like, but yeah, like we've got podcasts, or we've got, I don't know, a small community garden, or like a learn to garden thing, or maybe cooking. Like, I've always thought it would be awesome if we did like little cooking groups or cooking tutorials. It could be online and it could be in person. Yeah, I don't know. Like, just letting your imagination kind of go crazy and recognizing, like, as long as you keep reframing this back into, like, how am I empowering people? How am I giving them more free time? Or how am I making them question the current economic system? And how are we, like, remaining stable and having fun? Like, I think if there's two things I always ask myself, it's like, am I having fun? And are my actions meaningful? And those two things kind of inform themselves, because things that feel way more fun when they're also meaningful. If you can do fun and meaningful things, that's the fucking best. That's ideal. So yeah, I know that's kind of like a cop-out answer. I mean, there's things like, I wouldn't mind if we had, like, in 3 to 4, 5 years time, like, seeing more diversity, for more First Nations people, involving more First Nations perspectives. I would love it if perhaps we had more, like, picnics, more, I guess, like, what are the, like, comfy vibes, like, where you're not actually, we're not serving, we're also not at a protest, we're also not at a meeting. Meetings aren't terrible. I love that we're doing picnics for our meetings at the moment, but yeah, just like, just picnics, just like, or craft afternoons. We've had a couple of those, but yeah, wouldn't mind more of that. Just generally, I want us to go in, people to go in those directions that they feel like going in. And I, as long as that flexibility has, like, people retain, like, a sense of responsibility over the things that they kind of create, doesn't mean that if you start something, you're now bound to this thing for life. But recognizing that, like, right, if I was to quit, or, like, just to be, like, busy or get sick or something, like, I learned this the hard way, right? And I like, left to a on a holiday, and I didn't think about the fact that, like, Addison Road community, where we cook up, I was their only contact, and that all kind of, yeah, they couldn't contact anyone. Well, they could have emailed us, but that's okay. Like, if Addison, everyone from Addison Road is listening, so, like, so fine. It's, you guys are, like, wanting to contact us, and it's just, like, when there's only one person, and you kind of, again, it's just a learning experience, recognizing that, like, okay, if I start something, if I make it regular, are there going to be people who now depend on this thing, or are there going to be people who are expecting it? And if they are expecting it, do I have a backup, or should I let people know, hey, we're going to do this for the summer, and we'll see what happens after? Like, you don't have to commit to something nonstop. So I think, in the future, I want to see more projects, more, like, yeah, spin-offs and stuff like that. And hopefully, as a result, we get more diversity, more perspectives, more people. And again, this is more broadly as, like, Food Not Bombs chapters in Sydney, because that's what I actually want to see grow more than I want to see us serve every single day. Because when I was in Germany, they had multiple different groups, all under different names, not just Food Not Bombs. But other groups under different names, all with the same premise of serving free food, or sometimes low cost. Sometimes it was like, pay what you want. You could pay nothing, or you could pay whatever amount. And that was actually available every single night. So not all three meals, but every single, you could have every dinner for free when I was in Berlin, which I think was ideal. Even though they were all different groups, that's perfect, because again, you don't want all your eggs in one basket. Drama happens in one of them. Shit, we don't have dinner for Tuesday. Not great. But you got the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday crews still going. That's ideal. That's honestly, and people taking responsibility for things that they're starting. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's it. That's the dream.
Branching out.
Yeah.
Different nodes. Different
way, networks. Way more vague than my initial, like, survey response, which I think was trying to be concrete. I guess broadly, it would be fantastic if we... people could have free food every single night. Yes. I think that's reasonable, but not something us, as we currently are organized, should aim to do. We could maybe, but what's the point? It would be stressful as hell.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people in our group who are, say, in different suburbs of Greater Sydney. So if there's like little spin-off groups, then we can kind of help support, like you said, like one in a different suburb within Sydney, and then expanding into like using all the skills and the knowledge and the, like, strengths that people have. Like, people are in different professions. Once you get to know some of the volunteers, we can have, like, craft afternoons, like you said, zine making, teach-ins, garden workshops, cooking workshops. So there's a lot of potential. We don't have to kind of stick with the model of like the rigid model of what we're doing at the moment. We can be flexible.
100%. 100%.
Nice. That's inspiring.
Yep.
Yeah.
Flexibility is good.
Is there anything that during this chat you'd like to expand on? Anything I've missed for this one? I think it was a good conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'd chewed your ear off a bit. But I've had, I guess I do think about Funa Bums a lot. So it's nice to talk about it. Yeah. I would say for a very specific thing, for volunteers listening, there's been interest along, not collectively, but there's been interest here and there from members for a while on a Food Not Bombs Western Sydney chapter. And I know that there's people from Sydney who would be keen to, like Central Sydney, who'd be keen also to help set that up. Obviously, dedicating full-time or like every, weekly volunteering for that isn't even if it was feasible, not great to have entirely non-locals set up and purely be the only ones running like a Western Sydney, but to get it up and running and to get some help and knowledge and support. There's, if you're listening and you're keen to do that, definitely just ask in the chat, see if you can find more people keen. I expect that there's a lot more than we think.
Sure.
A lot more people who want to see that happen. I don't think there's anything else.
Sick. I'm sure we'll have a part two coming up soon with all the little tricks and tips after you fuck up all your current experiments. So yeah.
I fucked up peanut butter. You gotta roast it. If you don't roast your peanut butter, don't roast your peanuts before you blend them. It doesn't turn into like oily substance and it just kind of gets clumpy and it tastes like grass. So don't do that.
Yeah. First tip.
Yeah.
Preview for part two. Legend. This has been great. Until the next time. Thanks, Ezra.
No, thank you very much.